You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
In the past couple of months, the United States military has successfully decapitated two foreign regimes, capturing Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and killing Iranian Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei. Military action in Iran is still underway, but the Trump administration already appears to be eyeing up its next target, Cuba. Trump recently said that regime change in Cuba is now just a question of time and that it may or may not be a friendly takeover. This morning I spoke to Dr. Paul Tayon about the prospect of regime change in Iran and Cuba. We talked about the history of American involvement in these countries and the differences between what Trump is currently doing and previous attempts at regime change. Back in October 2012, Donald Trump tweeted the following, quote, "Now that Obama's poll numbers are in tailspin, watch for him to launch a strike in Libya or Iran. He is desperate." However, despite his own strikes on Iran, recent polls show that Trump's approval ratings have remained stagnant, with around 55% of respondents saying they disapprove of the president. Is Trump correct that warmongering is often a reliable way for a desperate president to boost their approval ratings? And if so, why does it appear that it hasn't worked for Trump?
That's a very good question, Toby. The first thing I'll say is that, well, apart from Trump's claim that warmongering is a way of boosting a flagging public approval rate for a president, actually, presidents in recent United States history have worked very hard to build a public consensus, certainly within government, for any acts of war. In this case, Trump has done absolutely, well, very little of that groundwork, and in fact, it's really striking the contrast in this regard between the current government in Washington and the government of Bush, who in the U.S. response to the attacks of 9/11 conducted military action in Afghanistan and, of course, invaded Iraq. But in doing so, the Bush government expended considerable effort building U.S. domestic consensus as well as international support. And what is more, I think very revealing, is that the Bush government worked very closely with international organizations, I should say channels, and didn't question those, rather worked with them. And that's another striking point of difference between Trump.
Lately, we've heard a lot of talk about the possibility of regime change in Iran and Cuba, not least from President Trump himself. However, in the recent military intervention in Venezuela, President Nicolas Maduro was simply replaced by his vice president, Delcy Rodriguez, who soon thereafter passed legislation opening up Venezuela's nationalized oil industry to American investment. Do you believe that Trump is serious about enacting comprehensive regime change in countries like Iran and Cuba, or is it more likely that he simply wants to ensure that specific leaders don't obstruct American business interests?
I think it is a very difficult thing to ask what Trump intends or knows. I don't think anybody really knows. So that's a very difficult question to answer on the face of it. But one thing I can say, or at least I have concluded, is that on the face of it, the example of the U.S. intervention in Venezuela seems comparable to the U.S. intervention in Iran, in very broad terms, but there's a great deal of difference as well. For in Venezuela, we're talking about a smaller, arguably less powerful country, certainly in terms of its military capability, in the Americas, within the United States' presumptive sphere of influence on the one hand, and then the other in the regime change that the Trump administration has effected in Venezuela, they have found a willing partner. That is not the case at all in Iran, a very different governing situation, and one that is, let's just acknowledge, is the regime in Iran has been problematic. But with the replacement of the Ayatollah Khomeini with his son, we have seen how in Iran that regime, in fact, has doubled down. And what is more, if anything, we are seeing indications that despite widespread popular protest against that regime, U.S. War against Iran promises or threatens to change that opposition to the regime into opposition against the United States, for this now can take on the appearance of war not against the regime, but against Iranians. And so regime change is not very plausible at all. As to Trump's motives, this is a president who, despite what he says, and what he says changes by the minute, act on impulse. And in that regard, he acts as an authoritarian. He acts in the form of the patron, a gangland style boss. And so if there's anything that seems consistent in his foreign, economic, and diplomatic policy, it is who has pleased him and who has displeased him. That alone seems to be an indicator as to his decisions regarding foreign policy. Lastly, I should say, of course, the influence of Israel and the government of Benjamin Netanyahu must be figured in here as well, for Netanyahu appears to have some real influence with Trump.
Moving on to what you call the presumptive sphere of influence in the Americas, the idea of controlling Cuba has been an obsession of American presidents for at least 200 years. With President Trump openly endorsing his own version of the Monroe Doctrine, it might appear that the geopolitical situation is fundamentally the same as it was back in the 19th century. So how has the strategic and economic significance of Cuba to the United States evolved over the centuries? And how, if at all, does the importance of Cuba in the 21st century differ from the era of James Monroe and John Quincy Adams?
How much time do we have, Toby?
We've got a few minutes.
On the one hand, the Monroe Doctrine of 1823 was a communication issued by the government of James Monroe, which stated that the United States had stood opposed to foreign, meaning European, interference in the Americas. And we must understand this communication at a time of liberal democratic revolutions across the Americas, broadly in the model of the American Revolution. Now, on the one hand, the Monroe Doctrine was a signal to the European powers not to intervene and to forestall those revolutions. Now, did the United States at that time have the capability to prevent any such intervention? No, it didn't. It was a statement of principle. It also was perhaps an early indication that American leaders regarded certainly the North American continent as the continental growth area, if you will, of what would become an American empire, at least across the continent, an empire of liberty, as many of those leaders conceived of it. But as to Cuba, we must understand its relationship to the United States in the shadow or the legacy of the War of 1898, which the United States undertook with Spain as Spain was fighting to put down a rebellion in Cuba at that time. With the U.S. defeat of Spain, the United States moved in to exert its influence over Cuba. And when Cuba won independence, though, in its constitution, the United States made sure to have inserted an amendment which allowed the United States to intervene unilaterally in Cuban affairs whenever it deemed appropriate, as well as Cuban pledges to land in the island for U.S. bases, where we get Guantanamo Bay from. Now, since that time, the United States has always taken a very strong interest in Cuba, A, for that reason, and B, for its proximity to the continent of the United States. Thus, in 1958-1959, when the Cuban Revolution took place as a communist revolution in the context of the Cold War, it was a matter of grave concern to U.S. policymakers as a regional and strategic threat. Since that time, though, a great deal has changed, and Donald Trump's statement as to regime change and influence in Cuba, again, I don't think we can really know what's going on in his head. And given his repudiation of the liberal worldview that had informed the United States' role in the Cold War, it is hard to take at face value that he has anything other than personal grievance working in his conduct toward the island of Cuba and nation of Cuba at the moment.
We all know that Trump has long coveted the Nobel Peace Prize. He didn't win it last year, much to his disappointment. Do you think he has a shot this time round?
I'm sorry, Toby, but is that a serious question?
No.
In my opinion, no. And what is more, if I can take that question and think about Europe, Trump's actions in Iran have placed European leaders in a very difficult position. None of them seem to have wanted to have themselves involved in this conflict and find themselves trying to navigate what is a tricky role for them. I don't think any of them, and certainly the Nobel Committee, will be looking at this latest set of actions as any evidence for Trump's worthiness of a Nobel Peace Prize.
That was Professor Paul Tyon, Senior Lecturer in U.S. History at the University of Auckland.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.